Go play basketball.
48 seconds remaining in the half. Atlanta has the ball at their own 25. Bryant out of the shotgun. Fires it up the middle. Intercepted by Berry. He's at the 25. Eric Berry from Atlanta at the 15. The innovative 10. 5. Touchdown. Kansas City. Born and bred in Atlanta, Georgia. And now he goes the distance on a giant mistake by Matty Ice Ryan, who gets thawed with the pick six near the end of the second quarter.
Best part about that audio is he said Matty Ice gets thawed. And then Eric Berry had that day where he was the greatest.
Now the Falcons will go for two.
World.
Two receivers to the right and a tight end.
This.
Eldrick Robinson split in left. Devin Coleman is the running back. Now Ryan will throw. It's intercepted. This can be returned for two. This can be points for Kansas City. It would give Kansas City the lead. It's Eric Berry. 40, 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. It is a two-point conversion the other way for Kansas City. The first time in Chiefs history, the Chiefs have pulled it off. And the Chiefs lead 29-28. Eric Berry, who went through cancer treatments not far from here at Emory University, just picked off the Matt Ryan pass and returns it 102 yards for 2 points, and the Chiefs lead 29-28.
He's been the voice of Chiefs Kingdom since 1994.
Damian Williams, 20, stays in bounds, 15, 10, 5, touchdown! Kansas City, Damian Williams runs to immortality!
Here's Mitch Holthus on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5, The Fan.
That's right, baby. That's right. We're now joined here on our show on Fesco and Dusty. Mitch Holthus joins us here. Mitch, I set him up. You knock him down, brother.
Well, it's hard not to get emotional to listen to that. As far as regular season memories, in my brief 31 years as the voice of the Chiefs, that's right up there. The fact that it was Eric's first game going back after having those cancer treatments at Emory, and he had bought tickets for a gob of nurses and hospital helpers who had helped him through those treatments. They were all in the stadium that day. And then both his mom and dad obviously were there. When he got the pick six, which I thought was poetic enough, then and he hands the ball to his mom in the stands, and I'm thinking, I know his dad's there. But then to get the only pick two in NFL history thus far. It's the only one. Nobody else has done it.
Wow.
That was 2016. And then he handed that ball to his dad. I mean, you it's one of those you can't make this up. And Dusty, you're very astute. You can help Bob with this. And you heard me say it on the play-by-play. What was the total after EB ran that two-pointer in? What was the Chiefs' total?
It was 29.
And what was Eric Berry's number?
29.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's great.
That's
as long as the Lord gives me oxygen on this earth, I will tell that story.
That's
it's too incredible. And people are going, dude, you're making that up. No. However, we're watching video years from now. I'm going to say, let's find this video. And here's what happened. It's really one of the more incredible NFL stories of all time.
Yeah, we're listening to 96.5 The Fan. You're listening to Mitch Holthus here, and Mitch Holthus is brought to you by Silverstein Eye Centers. Achieve your best vision and experience outstanding patient care at Silverstein Eye Center, and also brought to you by GEHA. GEHA is the proud partner of the Kansas City Chiefs.
What there's a two-part question here for me, Mitch, and I kind of go down memory lane a little bit. Number one is, it's amazing to me, and maybe this isn't even a question, it's just a statement I kind of want you to react to, but like, it's amazing to me on certain situations when athletes can step it up to that level like Eric Berry did. Like, you knew that was an important game and he raised his level. We see that happen a lot in professional sports. And that was a great individual performance. And we were talking about what Ohtani did last night, right? His 6-for-6 night and 3 home runs. I think it's the greatest single performance in the history of sports. What's the greatest single performance you have seen in person in sports?
Oh, my goodness.
Because I went with Derek Blaylock scoring 4 touchdowns against the Falcons and then Priest Holmes having 4 in that same game.
Yeah, 56-10 win. But that game just didn't – it's got to be something that moves the needle. Now, for Ohtani last night, he's in a pennant race or a race to get the 1 seed. But that 56-10 Atlanta win in 04 just didn't – I'm with you. It's cool. It's great. You don't see it very often. But I also – what does it lead to?
Yeah, they were 2-4, I think, at the time.
Yeah, and they ended up 7-9. Like that year, was coming off the 0-3, nine wins in a row and all that year. And it was like, what happened to that year? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that one isn't like super fun. These Super Bowl performances, especially, I think that, and this is more Dennis Quaid movie stuff, but honestly, right now, just right at the top of my head, it's Patrick Mahomes on an ankle, which is his excruciating, so excruciating, the pain he's feeling, it's shooting up his leg, that he's scrambling for that first down against the Eagles in Super Bowl 57 to lead to the go-ahead field goal, and the look on his face was the intense pain he was in. Now, he's told me that he was worse pain in Super Bowl 55 when he had the foot pain that he had to play through. That was the loss to the Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's just what flashes in mind. Now, you're talking about numbers and doing something incredible and crazy, and I don't have one of those right away. But, yeah, I mean, this one, the Barry one, what's the probability of that happening?
Right.
That, a pick six in his hometown where he was getting cancer treatment with all these people he's bought tickets for, then they get the only pick two in NFL history. And by the way, personal note here, I called the first pick two in college football history.
Now that's wild.
I know, and I got the first pick two in NFL history. But the point is, you just can't make it up. And then to get to 29 points, mm-hmm. I mean, that is Dennis Quaid movie stuff, but it happened in real life. So,
all right. Well, let's look at this weekend's game and move forward. First test on the road for some of these rookies. What are they going to expect?
You know, I told you week one, hey, you know, what, bright-eyed, what happens? And we're counting on these rookies now more than ever, more than we thought we were going to count on them. This early especially. And then week two, well, we saw some regression, right? We saw Kingsley with Trey Hendrickson just going nuts on him and the Chiefs making a move there. Carson Steele gets thrust into a role, but then he gets the ball ripped out from him. Still waiting for Jared Wiley to pop open here and do some stuff. Jaden Hicks has done a really good job overall. And then we know about Worthy week one to week two. Now week three is the next step in this thesis, and that is, what are you going to do on the road? We'll have a bunch of Chiefs fans there like always, but let me actually Falcon fans, and they're fired up after that rally against the Eagles on Monday Night Football. So what do we expect? I don't know. But there's a lot of responsibility on these younger guys. They can learn lessons from the 2022 rookies who are thrust into the same role and end up winning a Super Bowl. But that's where you rely on is our young leadership and our young mature leadership to help these guys, because I'm as curious as you are to see how they'll respond Sunday night.
Mitch, I want to bring up Kirk Cousins because I know he's obviously getting older in his career. He seems very statuesque, and his rushing total on DraftKings is 0.5. it looks like maybe they use, instead of using mobility, they might use play action as maybe one more thing that it kind of is a chink in their armor, maybe?
Well, maybe, but hear me out on this one. This is your strange stat of the morning. Kirk Cousins has, ever since he entered the league, I believe in 2012, has been one of the better play-action passers in the league. Mm-hmm. In fact, in 2022 and 23 with the Vikings, he had 16 touchdown passes. I think that was top three in the league off play-action passes. So what does Atlanta do in week one, right? He's got in a new system, although these guys are all refugees from the Sean McVay Rams system. But what does Atlanta do against Pittsburgh? No play-action passes called. The first time in Kirk Cousins' career, which spans, what do we got, 13 seasons? Mm-hmm. Zero. His quarterback rating was 59. They lose 18-10 on 6 field goals by Pittsburgh. Oh, maybe we ought to rethink this. Oh, so week two, and that Monday night game, he has 8 play-action passes and gets things rolling again for him. But sometimes guys outsmart themselves. Like, why would you not go, hey, we got to have some pap game in here for Kirk because this is what he does. And we have Bijan Robinson, who's a monster. Nope, let's just drop him back at 5 steps and see what happens. So a little bit of malfeasance week one, I think, for those guys.
Talking with Mitch Holtis here on 96.5 The Fan, and you know, one of the areas I think a lot of Chiefs fans are, you know, anxiety riddled over is the left tackle spot. You know, you talked about Kingsley being taken out of that game. Let's talk about that spot and what we kind of expect from it going forward, beginning this Sunday in Atlanta.
Again, I'm looking into a blank canvas here. Not sure. And I know both have been repping this week. And it's a matter of, even if Wanya goes this week, Wanya Morris, and goes for the bulk of the time, and there's times the Chiefs will go tackle over tackle. They went unbalanced line last week some. They'll do that some in this game. It's just what they do. They'll do it next week against the Chargers. And that means they'll both be on the field. Now, under different circumstances, meaning I'm not open, open side one-on-one, oh, here comes Trey Hendrickson to do every move in the book on me. But still, it's going to be a work in progress with Kingsley. They just have to make sure. He seems like, I don't know him that well yet, he seems like a very strong person mentally and emotionally, that this would not crush him forever. But still, this is going to have to be something that's going to have to be worked through. But Andy Reid here, I think, is, as much as Andy Heck, becomes critical, because he's a master psychologist, Andy Reid, and he's played the position, and, you know, it's a BYU kid. So he's invested in this kid to try to help him out. But even if, I mean, Wanya, it'd be nice if Wanya's out there to start. Like, Wanya, get after it here. This is another opportunity for you. Do this and attack, not just catch six touchdowns.
For me, the biggest concern offensively has been, why can't we get a yard, like third and one? It's been that way for the last couple of years inside the red zone as well. We couldn't cross the goal line on Sunday. What's going on inside the red zone there and third and short type situations?
I think that becomes the most paramount issue in this game offensively. The Chiefs are 5 of 17 on third down. That's 26th in the league. Now, I talked about Cousins. Atlanta's 30th. Only Cleveland and Carolina are worse on third down than Atlanta. But for the Chiefs, this also goes back to training camp. Even in the preseason games, there was a stalling on third down, particularly getting close to the red zone. Remember, starting for field goals in the preseason. So it is a matter of continuing to work on this. Teams defensively, what do you think scheme-wise they're going to do? I mean, Atlanta would be dumb if they just didn't take Cincinnati's blueprint and go, can we do this? But it's also a part of familiarity, too. Cincinnati is very familiar with the personnel of us, not just scheme, and Atlanta's not. So it usually is helpful in these NFC crossover games. But I'm with you. Third down will be paramount in this game. Now, the Chiefs only have 1 3-and-out. They're the best in the NFL so far in 2 weeks. 19 drives and 1 3-and-out. So it's strange. And yet just 5 of 17 on third down. So it's in the critical downs where they get close to the goal line, where that's where the primary issue is, and trying to get some sevens instead of threes.
Mitch, I want to bring up the middle of the field, because I would say, and I think you would agree with this as well, that Kyle Pitts coming out of Florida was regarded as one of the better tight ends of the future because of his size, athleticism, and all that. We haven't really seen it blossom. We also didn't know that Mike Gesicki still had it in him, and we didn't know that Isaiah likely was going to have the game he had. Here we are, week 3, the linebacker's big in this one when it comes to a guy that is athletically stable to blow the roof off the dome in Atlanta in a Kyle Pitts tight end position.
Yeah, and Dusty, a little bit different here, because both first two weeks with Baltimore and Cincinnati used a lot of multiple tight ends, because it wasn't just Gesicki. They had four tight ends active. And they were using three tight ends, two tight ends a lot. Now, Atlanta doesn't do that as much. They will some, but Pitts is a monster. You know, we love watching the Olympics, but I think we can realize we're watching the Olympics every week when we watch the NFL. These are world-class athletes, and Kyle Pitts is exactly that. He was the highest-drafted tight end in NFL history. He went 4th overall that year and runs like a wide receiver. But Atlanta doesn't use a ton of multiple tight end sets. I'm going to throw in, I'll give you that one, but then defending Bijan Robinson is part of the answer here, because he can wreck a game. He's got 48% of their advances. We saw what he did at UT. He would just take games over. But there's a lot of pressure here on the linebackers and the safeties, most notably the linebackers, because some part of the tight end thing you're talking about, Dusty, is linebackers, especially if they're double tight, because that means you're in base. That means it's all three of them out there, with Chenal and Nick and also Tranquil. So they're going to have a very good game, their best game in probably since last year's playoffs. That's kind of a captain obvious, but There's a lot of pressure on the linebackers in this game.
So, but what about Bolton in particular? Because I think he may be banged up a little bit, but still, you're out on the field. You got to go out there and play. If you're well enough to play, we expect you to play well, type of thing. Where is this for him? Like, I feel like he needs a big game.
Well, and this goes back to Dusty's previous question. If you're in multiple tight ends, then that means you're in base, but that means Nick's going to be in coverage a lot, and he's going to be in coverage in the second level and even sneaking into the third. So I think with Spags, in looking at his strategy, when you're up in base defense and coverage, is examining that. And he's usually awesome in making adjustments, but he's going to have to be better in coverage, Bob. And yeah, that's, you know, turning your hips. He's skilled. We all know what Bolt can do. And so this is a big game for him too, because Bijan Robinson is issue 1, 2, 3, and then Pitts is 4. And then they got other dudes. Drake London's good. Ray McLeod, last seen in Super Bowl 58. He's on this team. Darnell Mooney played for Nags in Chicago. He's really good. So they got some weapons here, and they got first round picks all over the place. But it starts with Bijan Robinson, and that means it starts with the Chiefs linebackers in coverage. Mm-hmm. Because he'll catch the ball a lot in the passing game, Bijan.
All right, before we let you get out of here, I got a feeling it's going to be a big day for Travis Kelce and a big day for Chris Jones. How do you feel about that?
I feel the same. It goes back to the familiarity part of it. If you play a team over and over and over again, you're kind of used to it. If you're not, you don't play a team very often. We haven't seen these guys since the COVID year of 2020.
Yep.
Playing Kelce is just so wild that I heard Raheem talk about it this week, but to say it and do it are two different things. And the same with Chris Jones. This is a good offensive line for Atlanta. Matthews is really good at left tackle. He's an NFL legacy. And good guys on the inside. But Chris Jones is a different freak animal. And so when you haven't played against him, you can scheme and you can think, hey, I can watch video, but until it really happens, it's tough. So I'm with you. I'm anticipating big days from those guys.
Have a good call down in Atlanta, Mitch. Get there safely, and we're all looking forward to being 3-0 on Monday morning.
Thanks for the Eric Berry memories. Honestly, I'd thought about it earlier this week, but not in the last couple days, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it's just such a remarkable story.
No doubt, man.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mitch. Have a good call on Sunday.
Thanks,
man.
Boys. Yep. See you.
That was good. I'm glad we got to the got Mitch to cry there for a little bit.
Yeah,
I thought.
It's good.
That's good. I do love that story on Eric Berry. I think also in that same season, I could be wrong. Pretty sure Eric Berry did something against Carolina that game where basically he ripped the ball away from somebody.
Cam Newton. Yeah,
yes.
That's right. Yeah,
and
yeah,
they won the game.
That
like game in the like, amazing. I think it was like late in the fourth quarter. Like I could be wrong.
I think that was that season.
And yeah, it was the same season. I think it was almost either back to back weeks, or it was like either somewhere in there when it came to like something around that same period.
Yeah, at Carolina, I think it was. Yeah.
It was at Carolina, and I don't know if it was like 2 minutes left in the game or if there was like a little bit left. Mm-hmm. I just know that it was extremely close into the thing. But yeah, Mitch Holtis joins the show. We'll bring up a little bit of what he said.